Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Discovering Buddhism. This is the module on death and rebirth. Laugh a minute module. Is there anyone here for the first time at Discovering Buddhism or Kayampa Center? Discovering Buddhism? Yeah? And yeah, good. Well, I'm glad you all are joining us, and I'm glad you started at the beginning of the module because that'll make it easier. There are a couple of handouts on the table over there at the end of the pew. Be sure you pick those up. And I'm just talked to Robbie, and we're changing what some of them say. So I'm going to go through the instructions, and especially for people who are here for the first time. So we're going to have four class sessions in this module, and the last session is going to include our practice day. So it will run from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. And if you miss a class, you can make it up by accessing either this live streaming or the audio, recorded audio version. Those streams and audio versions are available to members only right now. So if you would like to have access to those and would like to learn about becoming a member, our membership chair, Kim Lillig, please raise your stand up, Kim. There she is. She will stick around after class tonight to talk with anybody who's interested in doing that. It will be at the conference table out in the lobby. Is there anybody right now who knows they'd like to stick around and talk to Kim just so she can get an idea? Okay, you got one, two, three, maybe more. Okay, so she'll meet you out there. There's a big table, like, right out there. I'm sorry? The last class date is October 5th. Yeah. And I said it will run from 7 to 9 p.m., an extra half hour. Yeah. Okay. We're on the same page. So far. Right. But now everything changes. The attached class completion card is not attached because it is still being revised. So that will be available for you on that little table as you leave class tonight. I'll get those out to you. And also, there is, as Robbie said, almost 100 pages of reading in the required readings that are available free online at the FPMT Learning Center. And these are your instructions how to get to that. And you don't need to be a member of Kadampa Center to access these materials. You'll get online at FPMT Online Learning. You can set up a user ID and a password, and you're good to go because you've got the enrollment key. So there's about 100 pages of required reading on there. Therefore, Robbie is not going to require the text Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand and Mind of Clear Light, Advice on Living Well. Those are available in the bookstore if you'd like to have them, and they're both wonderful texts, but they're not going to be required for this class. I think that is all of the changes so far. There could be more, but I will go work on those completion cards. And I believe Jill has an announcement.
Thank you, Robbie. We do not have a speech tonight, so we're just going to keep talking. Hello. So I'm just coming to the first class of every module or everything we do here just to say hello and introduce myself. I'm Jill Marie, the center manager. And wanted to let you know, too, that we have yoga on Monday nights for you guys. I just taught. That's why I'm dressed up for you. So it's at 5:30 to 6:30 if you want to get a little supple before class. And also, just to kind of say a little reminder that all our classes here are by donation basis. We don't charge for anything at the Kadampa Center, which is quite unusual for the whole, I'm not even sure if it's the world, but I know in the U.S. So if you want to consider donating, you might think about different ways, like how much classes might cost elsewhere or by the class, by the session. And then if you do, it's for me, since I do the paperwork now, if you wrote DB on it or Death and Rebirth or something fun, I'll get that, and I'll know what to code it. And so just drop it in the box, or if you want to donate online, you can still indicate what it's for, and that would be greatly, greatly appreciated. So thank you very much, and I hope you have a good time with the DNR.
We are going to offer discussion groups after class beginning next week, since there's the new member orientation after class this week. We're not going to try to do everything, but we'll start that next week. So if you want to hang around, it's not required, but if you'd like to hang around and talk about the ideas that have been presented here and ask questions or just contribute your views on it, you're welcome to stay for a while.
Thank you, Joanna. Welcome, everyone. My name is Robbie Watkins. I'll be leading this module, and I think this is the very first time I've led the Death and Rebirth module. I've been coming to Kadampa Center since 1993 and have been involved in teaching Discovering Buddhism for the last 10 years, but I usually do mind and its nature, and karma and emptiness. So this is a little bit of a new experience for me. Again, so I can get a better idea who's here. Who's here at Kadampa Center for the very first time tonight? Okay, one person. Who's here doing, okay, a couple people. Who's here doing their first Discovering Buddhism module? Okay, a couple more people. Discovering Buddhism is a 2-year course that we offer continuously here, covers the main topics of Tibetan Buddhism in a series of modules that run from 4 to 6 weeks each, and there are a total of 14 modules. Let's see. Who here took Don Brown's class on refuge? Quite a few people. And who here took the mind and its nature class that I taught? Because that's going to be relevant to what we talk about in this course. That's good. But we'll review that. We have only 4 weeks, and there's some important material that we need to cover. That's a little bit shorter than usual, but just because of some idiosyncrasies in the schedule this year, we're limited to 4 Monday nights. But I think we'll be able to cover the important points. So, to begin with, we'll do 3 prostrations. If you're not comfortable with those, there's no obligation to do them, but it's a way of combating pride and acknowledging where we go for refuge, as we learned in the last class. So we'll do 3 prostrations standing together, and then we'll do the daily prayers in the Golden Prayer Book, starting on page 34. So make sure you have a copy of that available.
O namo manjusriye, namo sinusriye, namo utaya esriye soha. O namo manjusriye, namo sinusriye, namo utaya esriye soha. O namo manjusriye, namo sinusriye, namo utaya esriye soha.
Let me get wired for sound here. This class is being broadcast around the world. There are millions of people listening in. So when we get to questions or comments, wait so that we can capture that. Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah. So we'll begin with our daily prayers, pages 34 and 35. We'll do Refuge and Bodhicitta, Four Immeasurables, Seven Limb Prayer, and the Short Mandala Offering. And then we'll do a brief concentration meditation after that. So we'll do Refuge and Bodhicitta. We'll do these all in English. Refuge and Bodhicitta, we'll read together three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions since beginningless time. Rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryatayami. Okay. And now we'll do some meditation. So we begin by checking our posture. The most important aspect of the posture is that our back is straight, not rigid, but a little straighter than we normally sit. If you're on a cushion, it's good to sit maybe on the front third of the cushion. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean back, but just have be positioned so that your back is straight. Your head is not tilted to one side or the other, maybe just a few degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes either very slightly open, just letting in a little bit of light, or lightly closed. Lips lightly closed, not clenched. Shoulders down and back a little bit so your chest is open. Upper arm slightly away from your torso, so a little air can pass through there. And hands can either be one hand on each knee, or right hand on left with the thumbs touching, slightly below the level of the navel. And legs are in a position that we find stable and comfortable. If you're sitting on a cushion, you can cross them, one on top of other, any variation is fine. If you're sitting in a chair, have your feet flat on the floor, or if need be, a cushion underneath your feet. So examine your posture right now. Identify any sources of tension or discomfort. The point of the posture is that it is stable, and once established, it maintains itself. So it's not a distraction during the meditation. We can begin by taking three deep breaths through both nostrils, the abdomen expanding on the in-breath so the diaphragm is pulled down, and then the abdomen contracts towards the spine on the out-breath. And now we allow our breath to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin our meditation by setting our motivation. What is the reason that I'm doing this? And any motivation is valid and acceptable. There are no bad motivations really for meditating. If we just want a little peace of mind, that's fine. If we want to develop some qualities of calmness so we can better interact with others, that's great. But it said the most powerful motivation, the one that gives the most force to our meditation practice, it's what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation, the great mind motivation, the motivation of doing everything for the benefit of others. Even something as simple as sitting on a cushion for a few minutes and working with our mind is done so that we can be of greater benefit to all living beings. So that's not the natural way we think, but it's good to even force effortfully generate that motivation. So just take a moment and set that motivation. And having set our motivation, we can now begin the actual meditation practice. We're going to do just a very simple concentration meditation. We place our breath on the chosen, we place our mind on the chosen object. And whenever it wanders from that object, we bring it back. The chosen object for this meditation is the movement of the breath in and out of our nostrils. Just the physical sensation of slightly cool breath moving in and out through the openings of our nose. That's all. Just awareness of that. And every time we realize that our mind has wandered off to something else, to a sound or another feeling, or a memory of something that happened today, or a thought about something we need to do on the way home, we just gently, not roughly, but just gently set that aside and come back to the breath over and over and over again. And that's the meditation practice. Mind on the breath. Nothing more than that. And just as we begin our meditation by setting our motivation, we end it by doing a brief dedication. We acknowledge to ourselves that just by sitting and working with our mind, we've done something positive. We've created some positive energy. And may that positive energy ripen in the future in a way that is of benefit to all living beings. Has anyone taken this module before with one of the other course leaders? Who led it when you, do you remember who led it? Luis?
I want to say it
was. Okay, probably was, yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah. I'm going to start off just giving you an outline of the material we'll be going through since we don't have a lot of time. This may be helpful. This module is called Death. And Rebirth. This is the kind of subject that gives Buddhism the reputation of being a very gloomy religion. All they talk about is death and suffering and things like that. But it's actually not that way. I hope you'll realize that. Just to define terms, what's the Buddhist definition of death? When does someone die? Is it when your heart stops? When there's no pulse? When you're not breathing? Anybody know? What's death from the Buddhist point of view? Let's go take it, Ron. Bingo. Yes, very good. When the mind separates from the body. So this is why we get these stories about these great meditators who, at the end of their lives, give the external appearance of being dead by Western standards. They have no measurable pulse, no cardiac activity. I don't know if they've actually checked for brain activity, but according to the and teachings, their mind has not separated from their body, and they may stay in a state of deep meditation for several days after they look to all external appearances as if they were dead. So it's when the mind separates from the body. So that's what death is. That's what we're talking about. What is rebirth? Reverse the process. Okay, when the mind joins with the body. And if we're reborn in the human realm, as all of us here tonight were fortunate enough to be because of past karma, said that when the egg and the sperm join together, that's when consciousness joins with that fertilized egg at that very moment. Okay, so that's rebirth. At the very first moment that the egg and sperm, the body, creates a human egg, and the consciousness joins with it, that's rebirth. So what happens in between death and rebirth? Where's that consciousness been? Yeah, it's in an intermediate state, also known as the bardo. Okay, when the mind and the body separate, and we'll go into this in more detail, but I'm just giving you an outline. The body decays, it's physical, it just rots. The consciousness, which is complete, well, consciousness, non-physical, are intermediate state. Okay, the mind, the non-physical aspect of our being goes into the bardo, which is this intermediate state, and that's what the Tibetan Book of the Dead describes, the experiences that you may have in the bardo. And we'll talk about this a little bit more, but That's not really the meat of the course. How long does the consciousness stay in the bardo? That's the maximum, okay? It can be less. But no longer than 49 days. And based on past karma, karmic impulses, the mind in the bardo is attracted to, in particular, to the father and mother in the course, when they're in the act of intercourse. The karma draws them to that and enters into that egg as it's fertilized. And we'll talk about this more. But I wanted to get some of these terms defined. So death is the separation of the mind and the body. Rebirth is when the body and the mind, or the mind and another body, come together. So what am I talking about when I talk about mind? So for someone who took my course on mind and its nature, what is the mind? Or the consciousness? Those terms are used interchangeably. No, wrong. This is your first night here? You're brave for answering, but that's a completely wrong answer. He said self. And we're good Buddhists, we know there's no such thing as self, okay? But good try, okay? I appreciate it. What is the mind, or can you describe it? It's non-physical. It's not the brain. It is that completely non-physical aspect of ourselves. It's not the body. It's not the brain. It's non-physical. Okay, what else can we say about it? Its ultimate nature, its deepest nature, is in the nature of clear light. Right now, for most of us, our mind seems very contaminated, has a lot of emotions and thoughts, bad emotions, good thoughts, good emotions. None of those are the ultimate nature of the mind. The ultimate nature of the mind is clear, radiant, or like a perfectly clear sky. It has no fixed qualities other than that. What else can we say about the mind? Yes, very good. Its job is to cognize or to perceive. The mind is that aspect of ourself that perceives our world, our experience. All of our experiences perceived by our mind. And then what's the last characteristic of it? Yes, it has no beginning and no end, according to the Buddhist philosophy. Okay, so it's completely non-physical. It's in the nature of clear light. It perceives or cognizes, and it's without beginning and without end. You can look back, and there is no beginning to your mind, and similarly looking forward, there is no end. So that's where the idea, that implies rebirth, that consciousness continues on after this body decays, and it joins with other bodies in future lifetimes, countless future lifetimes, just as there's been countless past lifetimes. Okay, so the Buddhist, when we talk about death and rebirth, it's going to be based on an exception, it's going to be based on the concept of the consciousness continuing in the future lives. And I'm sure there are lots of people here who have doubts about that, or it just seems a possibility, but that's okay. But we'll be talking as if that were the truth. Okay. What brings my consciousness, what brought my consciousness together with this body that I have? Karma, okay? The effects of our past actions of body, speech, and mind. Okay? Everything is determined by karma in the Buddhist world. Okay, why do the body and mind separate at the time of death? There's no, exactly, yeah, no causes. It's what you can say is the karma that kept that body and mind together has been used up. It no longer exists. There is no cause for the body and mind to stay together. The body decays, The mind continues on through the bardo, where all of this karma comes into play, and the consciousness grabs onto another rebirth. For most of us, it's not a voluntary process, okay? Very much under the effect of karma that we don't understand. It's said by studying about this, we can start to take control of that process. Okay. Why do we want to talk about death in Buddhism? What are the advantages of talking about death? Is it just so we can get depressed and gloomy? Okay. To be prepared, okay? To understand? Get over the fear of it? To gain an appreciation of life? This is great. Somebody's been saying these are all the right answers. One, we know it's inevitable. We are going to experience it. So we might as well prepare for it because it can be a difficult experience. Two, it makes this life more valuable. Okay, it gives us some power, some force to our spiritual practice in this life if we realize we're going to die. Another reason is so we can become familiar with it because, and we'll get into this in more depth, it's said that the moment of death, when the body, and as we go through the death process, that is, if we're prepared for it and understand what's going to happen to us, if we've meditated on it, that is a moment when we can access our most subtle consciousness. Our clear light consciousness appears at the moment of death. And if we're not prepared for it, we just rush past and don't even see it. But if we've prepared for it, we can access that consciousness and make tremendous spiritual growth. We can actually use the moment of dying as part of our spiritual path and use it to make great leaps forward. It's saying that a very good meditator has no fear of death. A great meditator actually looks forward to the moment of death because they know incredible things can be accomplished then. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who's the head of the tradition that we're in, he does the death process meditation, which we'll go into in 2 weeks, I think. The going through the stages of death, it says he does that meditation 4 times every day. With everything else he has on his plate, you know, he's going nonstop. But he considers that so important to be prepared for the moment of death that he does that one meditation at least 4 times a day. This is not quite as elevated, but I had a friend who is a very serious Buddhist practitioner, and he moved to a new city. So he's looking for a house to buy. And he is driving around with the real estate agent, this very nice lady, and she turned to him and said, "Are there any special features you'd like in your house?" So she was trying to decide what to show him. And he thought and said, "I'd really like a view of a cemetery." I think she probably moved over to her side of the car a little bit more and made sure the doors weren't locked, but because he thought it was important to have that kind of reminder. You go into a Tibetan monastery and there'll frequently be a skeleton hanging by the door just as a constant reminder of death. It's going to happen. It's inevitable, so we need to be familiar with it. Okay, so let's see. There are two, in this course we're going to talk about there are two important meditations that we're going to do. We'll start the first one tonight. We may not get through it all the way. There's the 9-point death meditation. Another one of these famous lists. And then there's the death process or dissolution meditation. Dissolution meditation. This one is an analytic meditation where we think using our ability to reason and remember about death. This is a description of what actually happens during the death process. So these are the two important meditations we'll be working with in this course. And then in addition to those, I'm also going to talk a little bit about impermanence. Another topic that's very closely connected to death awareness. What's the definition of impermanence in Tibetan Buddhism? What does the word impermanence mean? Now, our mind is impermanent, even though it's without beginning and without end. So it's not quite that. Yeah. But what does impermanent mean? It's a little bit different from the way we think of it in normal English. But you got the, yeah, you're getting there. Okay. Changing, okay? Every karmic phenomena, everything that's a result of karma, which is basically everything, is continually changing. Okay? It doesn't mean that it necessarily goes out of existence, like our mind is without beginning, without end, but it is continually changing. So when we talk about impermanence, we're talking about change, okay? There's gross impermanence, which is, you know, look in the mirror every morning, you know, it's not what was there 10 years ago. Okay, that's definitely changed. And there's also subtle impermanence, how our mind is changing continually. How every phenomenon, if we could see things, we would see them as continually changing. But when we look at other people, emotions, experiences, we think they're permanent, that they're not changing, that they're always going to be the same. And that causes a lot of problems for us. So we're going to talk about impermanence a little bit. Any questions or comments on anything I've said so far? There are a couple again, this is way over my skill level to talk about. There are a couple permanent phenomena, which means they are not changing. Okay? Anybody know what any of them are? What kind? Empty space. Completely empty space. The space between two phenomena, two objects. The emptiness between them is unchanging, it said. What's another one? Is enlightenment permanent, the state of being enlightened? No, it's not. It's continually changing. Okay? The mind of a Buddha is still continually changing. Okay?
Is it emptiness?
You think it would be, but emptiness is a changing phenomenon. Well, no, actually you can't say the emptiness of a particular object is permanent, okay? Of a particular moment of an object, of a phenomena.
But it's not really a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More like a feeling.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the cessation of a negative mind state. It said if, for example, we completely eliminate anger from our mind stream, that is permanent in that it's unchanging. Anger can no longer arise. So the absence of anger is an unchanging phenomena. But don't worry about that. That's good. It's interesting, but it's kind of technical. Any other questions or comments about what I've said so far? Okay. Who in here is going to die? Let's see a show of hands. Okay. Who in here lives their life as if they're going to die? Okay, some people, okay. Who lives their life as if they were not going to die? Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is where something we have an intellectual understanding of. We all know that we're going to die, and we should live our lives in that way, I think. But at some level we reject that, some emotional level we reject it. It applies to other people, but not to me. So what we're aiming for here is what's called a realization. You hear this term used. Realization means your mind becomes so familiar with the concept of death that it's inseparable from your mind. It completely pervades all your thinking. You're always aware that you're going to die, not in that you're depressed or gloomy about it, but that it's just part of you. And it's said that we can realize all the steps of the Lam Rim, and that's how we transform our mind from our present state of confusion into the enlightened state of a Buddha, by developing these realizations of certain points. Emptiness, the laws of karma, things like that. We develop realizations. And that's a very, very great spiritual accomplishment. I don't know if anybody in this course is going to develop a realization of death, but that would be great. Okay. So what we're moving from is our intellectual knowledge that we will die to a deeper, more profound understanding. Not to get, like I said, not to get depressed, not to get freaked out, and if you find that thinking about this is doing that, just back off a little bit. But so that we have some fire to our spiritual practice, and we develop a greater sense of one of the first points in the Lam Rim, the preciousness of our human life. How precious this human life is that is going to end. So we should take advantage of it. Okay. So I'm going to start outlining the 9-point death meditation. And I think we'll be able to get through some of this. Good. Is anyone familiar with this, the 9-point death meditation? Anybody ever worked with this before? Yeah. There are 3 major points, and each major point has a conclusion that you come to. Or there are 3 headings. I'll stay with red. Anybody remember what the first major point is? Yes, death is inevitable. Or death is certain. Okay. Second major point is? Yeah, okay, so people know this. Time of death is uncertain. Third major point is, anybody want to take a stab at that one? You're getting the sub points. What's the big point? Yes, our spiritual practice. Only our spiritual practice can help us at the time of death. Okay, death is certain. Anyone disagree with that? Anyone want to make a case for the other side? Okay, time of death is uncertain. I think that's, we're aware of that. The third one's a little bit more difficult, that Only our spiritual practice is of use at the time of death. And I'm not saying you need to buy all these right off the bat, but just start to think about them. So, under this, under death is certain, there are a couple points. Some of them may seem a little bit silly, but they're actually very interesting if you start to think of them. Okay? First one is that everyone dies. So far there hasn't been anyone in the history of mankind who hasn't died, except for those of us who are getting older as we speak. Okay? The second point is our life, this is a great one, I love this one, is continuously getting shorter. Yeah, yeah, this is a laugh riot, isn't it? I mean, across the board, there is absolutely no one whose life is getting longer. Everybody is moved, just from when you came in tonight, you're closer to your moment of death than you were. We'll talk about these more. Okay? The time we have for spiritual practice is very short. It's limited. Yeah, time for an uncle put SP, spiritual practice, is limited. Okay. So, according to textbook Tibetan Buddhism, if we think about these, if we meditate on them, we come to the conclusion that I should use my life wisely. Okay? That's the conclusion. The uncertainty of the time of the death. Okay? First one is lifespan is unknown. How many people just have this assumption in the back of their mind that they're going to live to 84, maintain all their faculties, and have a very peaceful and quiet death with their loved ones around them? Joanna, yeah, okay. So what would the date be? Yeah, you want to set a date and we'll meet there? We don't know, okay? It's completely uncertain. There are many causes of death. And all you have to do is pick up the newspaper. I mean, look at those poor people who went to the Hajj in Mecca and had a crane fall on them. I mean, they weren't counting on that happening. Another way this one is phrased is, the causes of death are many, the causes of life are few. I mean, just the littlest microbe. And then the next one, actually I kind of jumped ahead. The human body is very fragile. It's weak. The fact that we stayed alive as long as we have is amazing. Okay? So the conclusion is, what do anybody know what the conclusion, what conclusion do we come to if we do this correctly, as they say, and don't get hung up on that? Okay? I need to start practicing now, okay? Spiritual practice now. Not tomorrow, not this weekend, but start right now. Okay? Let's see. Only our spiritual practice can help us at the time of death. Family and friends cannot help us. Can't help us at the time of death. Our possessions can't help us. Our bodies sure can't help us. So the conclusion we come to is we need to need to practice sincerely and wisely. We don't just need to practice, but we very sincere and wise practice. Okay, who's depressed? Okay, death is certain. The time of death is uncertain. Only our spiritual practice can help us at the time of death. It actually said that family and friends, if they're clinging or we're clinging to them, that can actually be a problem at the time of death, because we don't want to go into the bardo with a clinging mind that grabs onto the first rebirth that passes by. So that the bardo, if we're not prepared for, is a very scary place. There are all sorts of visions and hallucinations. And so the point is to enter that with a very clear, calm mind. And so if you have the good fortune to die a peaceful death, you know, you may want to have mantras being recited in the background. You know, you may want to remove your possessions or those objects that bring up attachment in your mind. And, you know, it's not that you want to shut people out, but, you know, make sure it's appropriate, that this element of clinging isn't brought up. And then, so in this analytic meditation, we have these supporting evidence that goes with each point. Everyone dies. Our life is continually getting shorter. The time for spiritual practice is limited and getting shorter. It's getting less. So I need to use my life wisely as the sands go through the hourglass, as they say, like the days of our lives. The time of death is completely uncertain. We all have this assumption that we're going to live till we're 80. And it doesn't work that way. Lifespan is unknown. There are many causes of death. The human body is frail. So we need to practice now. At the moment of death, only the spiritual practice, what we've practiced, what we've worked on, those qualities that we've developed in our mind stream, is the only thing that will help us to have a peaceful death. And Joanne is creating the cause to have a peaceful death by taking good care of this bug. And so, you know, some people say it's almost like our whole life we're practicing for the moment of death, so that we can be calm, aware of what's happened, and use that moment to the greatest possible advantage. Family and friends can't help us. Our possessions can't help us. Our body can't help us. So we need to practice to the best of our abilities. Okay, question. Let me get the, this is a good question. Okay.
Okay, so this is good if you've got time.
Yeah.
If you're suddenly in a car accident, how in the world would you be able to, it occurs just like this.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, okay. When we go through the death process meditation, we'll talk about the various stages your mind and body go through, which is kind of presupposing that a very, like I say, peaceful death. That having that kind of death is the result of incredible good karma. Having a very violent, sudden, unprepared death means we didn't have the good karma to have a peaceful death. So the process is going to be much quicker. But it is, you will go through all the stages, they say, even if it just happens in a second. It's going to be much more frightening. It's going to seem much more chaotic. Okay? But there still is this process of the body and mind separating. Even if to external eyes, it looks like it's just a second or two. Yeah.
I feel really good about that thing.
Yeah, is there anybody else who's not depressed that I can, and we need to bring you down. Yeah, question, okay.
So if we live constantly in the right frame of mind, would we be ready for that sudden violent death?
we would be more ready than if we weren't. I think if we're practicing the death process meditation, like His Holiness does, even in a more, we'd at least be more familiar with what was happening than if we didn't practice it at all. The only, you know, this applies to a violent death in a car crash. The only thing that's useful is our spiritual practice, even if it's that kind of death. Okay, look, mic over here, please.
So are you saying that if I've had really bad karma and that could be the cause of a poor accident, can I reverse that karma if I continue to go on with my life, or is that part already just like predetermined?
No, it's not predetermined, yeah. You can. That's why we do purification, to lessen the effect of negative karma. The karma that's going to ripen at the time of my death is not determined yet, okay? We're creating the causes for it continuously, but the karma is so complicated. I mean, there's karmas, so many karmic influences, so it's not predetermined yet. Okay? Good question. Okay, over here.
Is our karma exhausted at the time of our death, or does it follow us into this bardo?
Excellent question. Yeah. Who here is taking the course on karma? Some people have, some people haven't. Okay. Karma, this is the deepest and most profound of everything, of anything the Buddha taught. Karma refers to every action of our body, of our speech, and of our mind. Everything we do, everything we say, everything we think is making an imprint on our mind stream that will inevitably ripen in the future. Without exception. Okay, so that's a lot of imprints on there. So at the time, and we'll get to this to some degree in the death process meditation, as the body and mind separates, the gross mind, which is Robbie, who interacts with the world around him and gets irritated and gets depressed and likes to eat ice cream, that's our gross consciousness, that dissolves. That does not continue. There is a subtle consciousness, which is really what we're accessing when we're a really good spiritual practitioner in this life. And it said we also access it in our dreams. It said we access it at the moment of orgasm. And certain other, said we access it if we faint. That our gross consciousness, those are where we're accessing our subtle consciousness. The subtle consciousness dissolves also. And what we're left with at the moment of death is the very subtle consciousness. And I don't know why they didn't pick a better word for it. You have gross, subtle, and very subtle. That's not real poetic, but so the very subtle consciousness is that clear light consciousness. And that consciousness carries our karma. So that is what goes on to the next lifetime. The clear light consciousness carrying the karma, it joins with the body, and the gross consciousness and the subtle consciousness are come into being also, arise again. Okay, so it's the very subtle consciousness that goes from one life to the next that carries our karma. So the karma is not lost. It goes on to future lifetimes. Our personality, that is not carried on. That's shed. Okay, said when you, in meditation, if you're a great meditator, a very profound yogi, you can actually access your previous lifetimes, but most of us don't have that ability. And it said you can actually see your future lifetimes too, but not my experience. Does that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Other questions, comments?
In terms of the second point under the first major point mm-hmm. that the sands of time are basically
yeah.
running out. I really like what Venerable Robina likes to say, and that is that we all start out, you know, from New York thinking that, you know, the end of life is L.A.,
uh-huh.
which we know is 3,000 miles over. Mm-hmm. But then we're driving along, and as we drive along, we get to Chicago, and we still think it's 3,000 miles away. And no matter how close we get to L.A., we keep the consciousness that it's 3,000 miles
mm-hmm.
away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Susie.
Doesn't some karma run out, and so that's why we die?
It's used up, yeah. Yeah.
The karma of this?
The karma that keeps our mind together with this body, okay? That karma gets used. You know, karma is used up. We experience its results. So that particular karma, but there's infinitely more karma that we're carrying on our consciousness. But the mind and body separate because there's no karma for them to stay together any longer. Without karma, it doesn't happen. So if there's no karma for the body and mind to stay together, they just inevitably fall apart.
So we should hope for our karma to continue in our life if we...
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. You pray, that's why, you know, we do these long life prayers, you know. I don't quite understand how we can pray for someone else's long life. But, yeah, you know, we hope to create the cause. You know, this is by Joanna giving that bug, taking it outside rather than squishing it. She probably created some karma for her life to be a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Who knows? Or possibly. That's one way of looking at it. Okay. So I would like to start on the 9-point death meditation. I don't think we'll get through all of it, but guide you through that. And this is, as I said, it is an analytic meditation, which if you're not familiar with that, may seem just like thinking. And that's okay. Don't get frustrated by that, because it is putting your mind in a very concentrated, focused place where you think very deeply about specific topics. That's the object, is death is certain. Just as we used our breath as the object, in this the object is death is certain. So we use our mind's ability to reason, to feel, to remember, and we can bring all our experience to it and just really kind of grapple with it in a very concentrated way. So when we do death is certain, I'll go through the 3 points underneath it, but if you have other reasons that would help you get this realization of the certainty of death, it's fine to bring them up. You don't have to stick just to these. Okay. So begin by checking your posture. As I said, the point of the posture is not to make yourself uncomfortable, but really a stable posture that doesn't distract. Just let go of all the my voice running on and on, all the talking. Even though I'm going to keep talking during the meditation, but really come to a more focused place. Take a couple deep breaths from the abdomen. And now take a minute to set your motivation. Mm-hmm. And having set our motivation, we'll begin the meditation. As I said, it's an analytic meditation. As we contemplate these points, bring in your own ideas and experiences to illustrate each point. Try to get a deep feeling for each point. If at any time in the meditation you experience a deep, strong, intuitive feeling of the point, you can cease, stop the analysis and just stay with that feeling as long as you can. When it fades or your mind gets distracted, come back to the analysis, the contemplation. And the main point we're going to deal with in this meditation is the inevitability, the certainty of death. We spend a lot of time planning activities for tomorrow, for the week, for this year. But death is the only certainty in our lives. The only thing that we know will occur. But we don't like to think about it or plan for it. If the thought arises, we usually try to push it away. That's not something I want to think about. But it is so important to think about death and to prepare for it. Death is definite. I don't think there's anything else in our life that is as inevitable. And to develop some certainty, some conviction about this, we can start by thinking by the fact that everyone dies. No exceptions. No matter how powerful, how wealthy, how many friends, what a wonderful family, everybody dies. We can say that being born inevitably leads to death, is the cause of death. It is the human experience. Who alive in 1815 is still here today? Thomas Jefferson? Nope. Napoleon? Nope. All gone. Who of the 7 billion people on the face of the earth will be here in 2215? If you find it to be helpful for your meditation, you may want to think of all the people you know who've died. If you find that too upsetting, you can set that aside. But people who died much younger than anyone expected. I mean, we can make a little mini meditation on all the great rock stars who died before 80. People we know just fallen over, died suddenly. Moses Malone, great athlete, just died the other day. Apparently quite suddenly. Only 61 years old, I think. Maybe a little bit older. I don't think he got up that morning and said, "This is the day I die." The second point to think about is that our life is getting shorter. There is continuously less of it left. All of us are getting closer to the moment of death. Whenever that may be, we don't know. But every single human being on the face of the earth is continuously moving towards the moment of death. There is nothing we can do to change that. Impossible. It is a fact. It is the reality of our existence. And accepting that we're moving closer to the time of death, inexorably, how are we spending the time that is left to us? Well, a good bit of it goes into sleeping. A lot of it goes into work for most of us. Some of it we spend just spacing out. Watching TV, idle gossip, but how much of that precious, unknown, ever-shortening lifespan do we spend developing our mind, developing qualities of patience, generosity, kindness, wisdom? And so the point of this is not to beat yourself up or feel bad, but just do a little bit of a reality check. If I know that I'm going to die, if I know I'm getting closer and closer, how am I spending the time that's left? And how much am I, I'll do that practice next month. I'll have time for that after I retire. That's when I'll really be a serious practitioner. And if you think deeply about these points and any other points that come up to your mind, I think we do get a sense of, yes, I need to work on my spiritual practice.
that is what the best possible use of what remains, of the time that remains. We develop a little sense of urgency. The point is not to get panicked, but to develop some urgency and conviction about, yes, I'm going to do it now. So just come to whatever conclusion makes sense to you. You can relax your concentration now. So that was the first three of the 9 points. Any comments or questions? I think we'll just stop there and not try and rush through the other six tonight. Okay, a couple hands. Let's start with Mary over here, okay? And then we'll go here.
This is just a quick comment. This last week, I don't know if any of you have access to Showtime, but there's a series on, it's called Time of Death, and mm-hmm. it follows, it's like only one season, but it's like 6 or 7 series. It's amazing. It follows them through the process. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it.
Okay, thank you.
Practical question, is this meditation included in the readings?
I don't think so. So there's a good version in the book called How to Meditate by Kathleen McDonald, but you may want to write it down, just scribble it down so you can remember the points.
When practicing this on your own, mm-hmm. how do you determine when you move to the next point?
Yeah, you just have to figure out what works for you. I mean, you may want to do your whole meditation session on just one subpoint, or you may want to, and then every now often go through all of them quickly just so you're familiar with it. It's good to be able to memorize the points so you can, so you're not sitting having to read them, but it's there's a lot free form. Okay? Good question. Anything else? Okay, so next week we'll go through the remaining 6 points, meditate on those, and then we'll start on the death process meditation, which is quite long and very involved, and we won't get through all of that next week, but we'll start that. It's a very different meditation. It's very experiential. You imagine that you're actually going through the death process, and your senses gradually disappear, and you have various visualizations that appear to you of light and flame. It's fascinating, okay? But very complicated. So we'll start that next week. And to finish up tonight, I'd like to read the Shantideva dedication, which is on page 246 in the prayer book. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and most of them be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, thank you, everyone, and we'll continue next week.
Thank you.
Any announcements?
The completion cards are on the table, so grab one on your way out. And if you want to meet with Kim about membership or information, she'll be at the table outside. Thank you all. Good night.